Picture this. Recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience. Right, well, first this week, the family experience. Let's start with dads, or to be precise, other people's dads. At least one person at school always had a really embarrassing dad who was never aware that he was being embarrassing. When you went round to their house to watch Top of the Pops, he'd come in and say,
"Hey, what's this? It's got a good beat."
And then he'd start dancing. In that way that only parents can dance in. I.e. like the dummy from the Volvo advert. In a cardigan. Embarrassing dads also say things like,
"Still got your eye on that Susan what's-her-name? Don't do anything I wouldn't do."
There is, however, very little he wouldn't do, judging by his expression during the fifth year's gym display at the last parents' evening.
Then there's mums. Now, mothers feel an overwhelming desire to guide you down the right path. Whatever you do, your mother has already done it as well and will always say,
"I don't want you to make the same mistake I made."
Which left me wondering how on earth my mother had got her head kicked in for nicking Martin Nichols' bicycle pump.
Now, when you're young, a lot of embarrassing things can happen with your parents. One thing that normally crops up is telling your parents a joke that you heard at school without realising that it's a rude joke. Now, to illustrate this, I cite an example, a true example of Mr. Dennis here, who at a tender age came home from school and proudly said to his mother,
"How do you get to Shepherd's Bush?" "Up the shepherd's leg."
Now, this sort of incident places the parent in a difficult spot. They have to explain that it's a rude joke, but at the same time not explain exactly why. So they say things like,
"That's not a nice joke."
Or,
"Don't tell that joke again."
Or, "Ah!" Or,
"You've been watching Philip Schofield again." It's a strange irony of life that what causes the most embarrassment within families is the same thing that produces families in the first place. Every child's first reaction on learning the facts of life is a shudder of horror at the thought of their parents doing it. However, of course, it can be worse. In the animal kingdom, families can operate in very strange ways indeed. For instance, as you probably know, there is a species of spider where the female eats the male as soon as they finish mating. Now, this has led to some This has, of course, led to some extraordinary feats of sexual prowess from male spiders.
"Come on, hurry up. This way won't take the strain much longer."
"Oh, it's early days yet, darling. We've only been going for four. So far, I've only got three of my legs over."
"Oh, no!
Oh, look, can't we just talk about it for a bit? I mean, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a cup of tea. Fancy a cigarette?"
Okay.
TV role models for family life are many. The Waltons, for example. Why did Ma and Pa Walton take so long saying goodnight to all their kids one by one every night? The answer is because they wanted to make sure that none of them were doing what most teenagers do when they're on their own in their bedroom at night.
"Good night, Jim Bob."
"Good night, Ma."
"Good night, Jim Bob."
"Good night, Pa."
"Good night, Mary Ellen."
"Good night, Ma."
"Good night, Mary Ellen."
"Good night, Pa."
"Good night, John Boy." "John Boy?"
"Good night, Ma. Don't come in."
Then, of course, there was a worse advert for the family, and that was Ask the Family.
"Ah, would that it were. The answer is pi r squared, and that means that the know-all family from Crawley nudge ahead of the smug twits from Maidstone." Now a question for father and younger daughter only. What is the strange Freudian significance behind the way I always ask father and younger daughter only?
The Oedipal tension created at adolescence by same-sex rivalries?
Ah, Mr. Smugtwit has it. And now a question for mother and elder son only. The story of Oedipus is said to symbolise a subconscious desire in every male to marry his own mother. True or false or utter cobblers?
Utter cobblers.
Ah, correct, young Noel. And for an extra point, is it not true that you find your best friend Nick's mother much more attractive than your own? And in fact, you harbour a pathetic fantasy in which she leaves her highly successful company director husband to go off with a spotty, specky 13-year-old whose only experience of women is via the dog-eared issue of Mayfair hidden in the bottom of his Scalextric box.
Correct.
Ah, you sad little Henry Kelly.
Finally, the biggest nightmare in all families is that as you grow older, you find yourself turning into your parents, the one thing you wanted more than anything else to avoid. You know that the nightmare is coming true when you catch yourself saying things like,
"You won't be so keen on voting Labour when you start paying income tax."
Don't waste your time at college. Work hard now and it's an investment for the future.
And then, of course, there comes the time when you turn on Top of the Pops and say,
"Who's that?"
Or even worse,
"Hey, what's this? It's got a good beat."
You bugger. The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
I'm enjoying this.
Wow. We've discovered that last week, when it looked as if there was nothing to choose between Douglas Hurd, Michael Heston and John Major for the leadership of the Conservative Party, top politicians had decided that the choice of leader should be based on a new criterion. Which of the three was the hardest? Last weekend, political pundits were on standby.
"Well, clearly against a taller man like Michael Heseltine, John Major would have a number of options open to him. He could nut him. He could get a burst of quick punches in and hope he'd done enough. Or most impressively, he could call him a poof and then just stand there, beckoning him with his hand, saying, 'Come on then, you lanky streak of piss.'" "By the way, I could have Brian Walden. I could."
All three contenders had already drafted prepared statements. Michael Heseltine:
"Well, John Major says he could run the economy. But surely the question is, could he run the Arsenal?"
Douglas Hurd:
Although I'm the oldest, what you must remember is that I'm so ugly, I don't care what happens to my face."
And John Major:
How hard am I? Well, Jacques Delors got away with saying a lot of things about Margaret Thatcher because she was a woman. If Monsieur Delors gives me any lip, I'll say, give it to Douglas Hurd, he needs it.
It looked at this stage like anyone might win in a straight fist fight. Brian Walden spoke to Vinnie Jones.
"Well, Vinnie, I had a terrible thought the other night. I thought that maybe, just maybe, the three contenders who all wear glasses, I thought that perhaps none of them genuinely needed those glasses and are just wearing them to avoid fights. And by the way, I'd just like to say to John Kell, any time."
Well, of course, John Major won and straight away confirmed his hardness by not having any women in the cabinet.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome to my first cabinet meeting. Now, this is the first all-male cabinet session for 11 and a half years, but this won't, of course, change things in any way. So now let's get on with the first item on the agenda. Who can piss the highest?
And not only that, but Norman Major, it's just been revealed, is not going to be moving into number 10. Presumably this is because John said, Norma, you're not moving into number 10.
Number 10 will then become like an all-male student flat. There'll be dirty washing up all over their carpet. And some bloke called Stuart who's been kipping on the floor for 3 months. And a lot of people sitting around talking bollocks about politics.
It's 1 o'clock. I'm bevied up and I'm standing outside Brian Walden's house. Are you coming out, Muppet Mouth? Call yourself a political analyst. People can't understand a word you say. Come on, your wife looks like Norma Major.
And now, could you please welcome Mark Hurst?
Yes, yes.
How you doing? Doesn't matter who you are now, if you're slightly famous, you can go and get hostages from the Gulf now, they added, with Tony Benn now. Muhammad Ali has been promised 14 hostages. Ken Dodd's gone over there, he's getting a few out as well. And Alan Titchmarsh is over there as well. The woman from the Flake advert, she's been promised a couple as well, so that's good. Talking about chocolate, Roald Dahl died this week. Did you know that Roald Dahl also wrote the screenplay for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? One of those musicals that people said, yeah, they don't make them like that anymore. They don't make them like that anymore because they were all crap, that's why. People don't sing and dance in the street. And it wasn't an accident that they don't make them anymore. In Hollywood, all the producers got memos sent around the office saying, don't make them like that anymore. Children's literature, though, it does have a big effect on you. And I remember the Borrowers. Remember the Borrowers? Little people that were responsible for everything that goes missing everywhere. If they didn't believe I was a borrower in Sainsbury's, I was... You know. I'm only borrowing these chocolate biscuits. I can bring them back when I've eaten them. It's been like a kid's story this week, and it Goldilocks and the Three Boars, we could have called it, really. It was Baby Boar that won as well, eh? John Major, they call him the son of Thatcher. He denies it. It's like the Beale family. They're having blood tests and everything there, you know? Nothing to do with me, eh? And he says things like, if it's not hurting, it's not working. It's not a sadomasochist, you know? Just rub that fiery jack on my nipples and tell me there's not a recession, John. Yeah, just do it. Do you know, in America, the other creatures that are really popular are not turtles, but cane toads. Has anybody heard this thing about cane toads in America? This is completely true. I've read an article. There's these cane toads, and if you pick them up, and it gets angry and forms a solution on the top of its head to deter predators, but if you as a human lick off that solution, you'll get 20 minutes of nausea followed by a 6-hour hallucinogenic trip. This is going on. I don't know what's... I've heard of chasing the dragon, but running after a cane toad... Somebody's going to sell them out of vans with lolly sticks up the backside. What's it called on the street? Croak or something? I don't know. At least you've got better clothes now than I had to. I used to have those multicoloured tank tops like Interference on a colour television. And also, remember those T-shirts? People used to wear T-shirts with I'm with stupid, with the hand, with the finger and the thumb pointing. The people who wore those, they were always by themselves as well. Then in the 80s, men started wearing these shirts and jerseys with American motifs written, stupid things like Arkansas Lumber Company or Linebackers Hockey Squad. These blokes worked in a bloody building society, you know. So Halifax Card Cash Service Till Engineers, yo. I could have been in a band at this point if I'd have kept my musical career up, because I played the Descant recorder, as a lot of us did. And I've never thrown my recorder away, and look, I've got it with me tonight. There you go. This is a scream, if you will, but I'm going to play the bloody thing. Don't worry about it. No, I used to take my recorder playing very seriously. I was the one in assembly standing on one leg pretending to be Ian Anderson at a Jethro Tull. I was there. And I thought tonight what I'd like to do is play a selection of the old hymns that I used to play in assembly. There was not many, about 40 of them, so it won't take long. Don't worry. I would never actually play this ever again, not after my father did what he always said he would do if I didn't stop that chuffing racket. When you sat on a foot of woodwind as a boy, you don't forget it in a hurry, you know. I always wanted to be in a band because that is the only job where you introduce each other at the end of the set if you're the bass player, the drummer. And that should be in every job. Every job that's a team effort, someone should come out and make intros. Like, he made some great in an office. He made some great phone calls today. Eddie on lead vocals. Give a round of applause there. Sharon on keyboards. There she is. Or if you work in a factory, all the machinists should suddenly stop and say, Fred, lathe solo. Go on, do it now. Be nice. It would be nice. What they were saying earlier on about when you're getting older and looking at Top of the Pops, it is, because when I was a kid, I used to go and see any band and just get in the crush so long as I couldn't hear the following day. I was happy, you know what it's like. I had a great night last night, touched singer's foot and broke all my ribs. Bloody brilliant, huh? But you get older, you do mellow out. One day you wake up and you realise your favourite cassette's the head cleaner. You go, mm.
Oh, I say. Last week we forgot, apparently, to give you a subject for the correspondence experience, and the reason we know this is because Miss N. Vaughan from Mumbles, Swansea, has written in and said, Dear the Mary Whitehouse experience, last week you did not give a subject for your correspondence experience, so I have written to you about nothing. Yours, Miss Nicola Vaughan. So, right, we're not going to fall for this one again. We're going to give listeners at home a subject for this week's correspondence experience.
Yes, thank you, Steve. Well, everybody, Christmas is coming. So why not share your Christmas gift ideas with the nation? Send in your suggestions and we'll read them out to help fellow listeners in their difficult pre-Christmas shopping period. Send your gift ideas to I'd Like a Remington Fuzzaway and Nosehair Clipper, The Mary Whitehouse Experience, BBC Radio 1, London W1A1AA. And don't forget that next week we'll be lighting up the first candle on the Mary Whitehouse Advent Crown.
And now, the work experience. The idea that you have to work for a living is the big lie of human history. It's extraordinary that more people don't think, what am I doing? Every day I go to the same place and have a really unpleasant time and I'm supposed to do this non-stop until 6 months before I die. Because the biggest lie is the golden vision the media presents of retirement.
But it's time that pension ads told the truth.
I want to be John Barnes.
Oh, I want to be my own boss.
I want to be able to go to the toilet on my own and not have to use a catheter.
But perhaps we've got pensioners wrong. Perhaps things were so bad in the past that what they have now is exactly the rosy vision of the future they've always hoped for.
So, young fellow, how would you hope to be living in the year 1990?
1990? Well, firstly, I'd hope to have, if I keep working hard, a coat that some dogs have pissed on. You know, one that I could wear all through the summer. And, well, I know this is a bit ambitious, one of those completely blackened kettles. What else? Oh, yeah, arthritis. And grandchildren who think I smell funny. That's my dream.
Alternatively, because most pensioners have got Alzheimer's disease, perhaps they just forget how bad their lives are. Perhaps, therefore, in the interest of self-awareness, the social services should employ people to shout, "You're old and sick and crap" at them every 15 seconds. In a TV programme called Troubleshooter, Sir John Harvey Jones, ex-chairman of ICI, turns up in his Jag at a different company each week and tells them what they're doing wrong and how they should run their business. Then the company boss goes, "Have you finished, mate?" and kicks his head in.
What Sir John should be doing, of course, is telling you how, from the word go, to avoid working.
Well, the first thing everyone should learn is how to be the one in a group of five people carrying a heavy weight who isn't actually carrying it. This you achieve by grunting and frowning and maybe even stopping and flapping your arms in the air. Right, that'll do for today's programme.
One modern way of avoiding work is to go on the Enterprise Allowance Scheme. But whatever anyone tells you, the Enterprise Allowance Scheme hasn't been set up just so that the government can bring down the unemployment figures.
So you realise that we can't possibly let you on the scheme unless you have a viable business proposition.
Well, I'm interested in publishing an Arabic version of the Satanic Verses.
You're in.
People complain about the government massaging statistics, but actually that kind of figure wizardry is good for the country. They've been doing the same thing for ages with the exchange rate, and actually the reason the government are against the single currency is because the Italians might find out that at some point in the past we shifted a decimal place. However, work isn't necessarily bad, right, work, unless it's drudgery. But work is often confused with drudgery, as in the work of Jeffrey Archer.
And of course, drudgery is relative. For all we know, the man who sits in a little office in the toilets at Euston Station is someone who considers himself lucky to have a job which happens to coincide with something he really enjoys doing. Like a pop star.
Well, I must be the luckiest man in the world. Sometimes I just think, I can't believe they're actually paying me to do this. It's amazing. Oh, hello, Elton.
What kind of administrative work is actually going on in that office, though? I mean, what sort of files are they keeping? You know, presumably only ones marked P and S.
Well, no, Dave, what they're actually doing in there is working towards getting that toilet into shape for 1992, you see. It's all right. Right. And a single European market. I mean, they've only got 2 years left to take out all the seats and bowls and leave just a series of holes in the ground. And yeah, that's progress, I suppose. Yeah.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
I want to be rich.
I want to be happy.
I wanted to be Prime Minister.
I want a new coat.
I want to meet Mike Yarwood.
I want to see a decent game of cricket where England are less crap.
I'm not bitter, but I really did want to be Prime Minister.
I want a nice gabardine one with a belt. Just like Michael Bronson's.
I want to be a size 12.
I want to be in Brookside.
I want to be alive.
I mean, the environment is all very well, but number 10 would really have been the business.
Well, maybe I'd get one of those nice Parkers with a hood.
I want to be this of a computer in a dear transport.
I want to be sick every time I see this commercial.
Now it's time for the punchline competition. You had to come up with punchlines to this joke. What were the first words exchanged between Muhammad Ali and Saddam Hussein, or vice versa? Muhammad Ali: I think you'll win the war, but then again, I am mentally deficient. That's my favourite. And that's from The Girl Who Pokes People's Eyebrows Out. Okay. What were the first words exchanged between Muhammad Ali and Saddam Hussein? I was at work when I heard about it. I never thought she'd resign, I tell you. Anyway, I think Major's the best man for the job. Did you hear about Felicity Kendall running off with Tom Stoppard? I'd always liked the good life. And that's from Donatella Heseltine. Assalam to Ali. And you are the ex-prime minister of... And what were the first words exchanged between Muhammad Ali and Saddam Hussein? Saddam:
if we're honest with ourselves, we're just sad old men who think we're tough.
Ali: yes. The girl whose dad... This is from The Girl Whose Dad Works With a Woman Whose Husband Shared a Room with James Dean at Los Angeles University. Is this true? Who is it? Did he... Really? Really? Is he still in touch? Because I need some cars... I need some spare parts for my car. And penultimate one: you got something I want, but you want what I got, but you wouldn't get it. I know what you got. I want what you have, but you're not going to get it. Some in this room, there is someone called Anna, who I would like to stand up at this juncture. I wouldn't. No. You have already. Oh, good. She's behind me. Yes. Shut up. Shut up. Pay your poll tax and go home. So what is this a rap or something, or what is the meaning of this, Anna? Because it means something to you, because there's 8 lines of it here. You don't know why you did it. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone listening at home, crack is a very dangerous substance.
And now, from the Hippodrome, Leicester, the first of the Merry White House Experience Christmas pantomime, Cinderella. Starring that bald bloke off of the bill who isn't actually in it anymore. And that bloke from EastEnders who was two-timing Michelle but isn't actually in it anymore. And with his smiling face coming out of a slightly smaller star, Benny from TV's Tucker's Luck. Plus... someone who you for ages think was on television once, but in fact he works for the council. And in 2 years will be indicted for child molesting.
Our story begins in the castle of Baron Hardup, who, as you can tell from his name, is really poor. A poor baron. So poor he lives in a castle. Well poor he is. About as poor as Michael Heseltine after his premium bonds come up. What's more, he pays the same poll tax as someone who lives in a cardboard box on the embankment. Ah, this is his youngest daughter, Cinderella. She is very sad. Why is she sad? Probably because she's been lumbered with a name like Cinderella. What a crap name. You can bet your life her brother wouldn't have been called Rockefeller. She is sweeping the kitchen floor, a mere skivvy.
Cinderella, hurry up and clean out the toilet.
That was her ugly sister. She has 2 ugly sisters, and what's worse is that they're not even sisters. They're men in drag who used to be in EastEnders.
Oh, hurry up, Cinderella. You've still got to sweep the stairs, refelt and tar the roof and build the M40 extension to Banbury, all right?
Cinderella sighs and says,
"All right."
Ah, I forgot. In pantomimes, all the roles are sex-changed. Carry on, Mr. Sassoon.
Anyway, we can't help you because we're going out. Have you seen the invitation?
Dear Two Ugly Sisters and Cinderella, you are invited to a really posh ball at Topper's Night Spot and Discotheque, Streatham High Street. Strictly over 18s only, no jeans, Prince Charming.
But I cannot go, I've got nothing to wear.
So, what are the two pantomime dames wearing this year? Well, Ugly Sister number one is wearing a fetching long gingham skirt with two footballs stuffed down the front of her top. Beneath her eight layers of petticoats is a pair of Comedy Union Jack knickers, which she turns round and shows the audience when there's no laughs. Which, of course, there never are, as everybody hates pantomime dames, especially children. In fact, children hate pantomimes. The only people who like them are their fathers, and that's only because they get the chance to see Karen Keating in a leotard.
Later on that night, the two ugly sisters have gone off to the ball, and Cinderella is left alone on Saturday night. What could be more miserable?
Watch your screens. Here's another catchphrase.
That could. So, she pops out to the offie and the video shop.
Suddenly...
Hello, Cinders.
Who are you?
I am your fairy godmother. What I need is a pumpkin and four white mice.
You're not making that soup again, are you?
I can turn them into a magic coach and horses.
Just phone for a taxi, for God's sake.
Ah, here we are. Some mice.
It'll take too long to explain, listeners. I say the magic words... Henry Kelly!
Ah, well, good work, Ali Bongo. Regular Paul Daniels, you are.
Perhaps I need all the boys and girls to join in the magic words.
Oh, yeah, any excuse.
Face it, you are a crap fairy godmama.
After me with Henry Kelly, boys and girls. One, two, three.
So, Cinders is finally on her way to the ball in her magic coach, driven by the fairy footman.
Oh, no, I'm not going south of the river this time of night. Oh, no. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've got nothing against pixies, but there's too many of them. Now, you're goblins. At least they like to work, you know.
Driver, shut your gob. Blimey, I'm hungry.
Well, what you want, love, is a drink of Heinz soup from my thermos flask. You know, that I've dribbled in, that'll be nice. Could even be 7-0, Val.
Soon, Cinderella arrives at the ball.
OK, this is me, Gail Davies on the turntable, and got a few dedications to a Miss Snow White. I've got a message for you, and the message is, why have you shagged the other six and not me? And that's from Grumpy. Message going to Princess, you know who you are. Can't wait for tonight, and that's from Clifford the Dragon.
Over in the corner is Prince Charming.
Hey, who's that cracky little piece of town over there? Wait! She can sit next to me on the sofa in Hello Magazine any day. Hello, doll.
Hello.
Want to cut some rug?
No, sorry, I've got to be home by midnight or my carriage turns into a pumpkin.
Hey, like acid!
But Cinderella has gone. How can Prince Charming trace the girl who was wearing the glass slippers?
So, were you in the area of the Royal Palace at around 12 o'clock last Saturday night? Did you see a young girl wearing glass slippers attempting to make her getaway in a large coach and horses which may have suddenly transformed into a large vegetable and some rodents? If you did, call Crime Stoppers or, alternatively, see a specialist.
Fortunately, the answer is simple. Prince Charming finds her where anyone dancing in glass slippers is likely to end up. In the intensive care unit of the local hospital.
Ah, Mr. Charming. I'm afraid Miss Cinderella has suffered severe lacerations to both feet, massive blood loss and major shock.
So remember, kids, don't go dancing in brittle footwear. Next week, Sleeping Beauty and the danger of falling asleep for 100 years after listening to John Major. Good night, boys and girls.
C
You have been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Hunt, Hugh Dennis and Mark Hurst. The producer was Armando Iannucci. The address for the correspondence experience is I'd Like a Remington Fuzzaway Nose Hair Trimmer, The Mary Whitehouse Experience, BBC Radio 1, Broadcasting House, London W1A1AA.